Hey everybody, and welcome to Boozy Bracketology, where we believe in three things: strong drinks, strong opinions, and crowning champions. And tonight, we are going to be determining the best movie in the 80s horror portion of our 80s movie mega bracket. And quite frankly, the only thing more terrifying than these movies is how badly our panelists are likely to screw this one up. But we're going to get right into it. We're going to meet them, find out how they're doing and what they're drinking. We are going to start off in Champaign, Illinois, the only other place that I'm aware of where you can call sparkling white wine champagne if it comes from that region legally. Nathan, my friend, how are you doing? What are you drinking?
I'm doing all right. I am drinking a little on the boring side. I've got my generic Diet Coke here. Unfortunately, I got to get up early tomorrow. And, you know, I'm here more for the horror than for the drinks tonight, but I'm doing all right. You know, I watched a few scary movies with my 7-month-old in preparation to catch up and trying to get her into it early, you know. But, yeah, I'm ready to do this. I'm excited.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. We'll get right into it after we meet the rest of our panelists. Next up, all the way out in Las Vegas, Nevada. She was very particular about that pronunciation. I've learned over the years from many folks who have also made that point to me that I pronounce it wrong for most of my life. Christy Spees, how are you doing tonight and what are you drinking?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure.
I'm having rose petal tea because my daughter really wanted to be on this with me. And since we made this tea together, I thought it was my way of having her with me.
Aww.
But I would probably say my daughter has been my viewing partner for most of the movies on these brackets, especially over the pandemic. We just sat and we watched horror movies. So, well, yeah.
That's lovely. That's awesome. Well, I'm glad she could join us as well in spirit.
Yeah. Since we are recording this on St. Patrick's Day, I threw a little whiskey in there as well.
Excellent. Excellent. Lovely. And next up, heading to Florida, specifically the Clearwater area. Couldn't do it without him. Chris, my friend, how are you and what are you drinking?
Mike, I'm doing well. I am going back to work tomorrow, so there's that. Went ahead and mixed myself a little bit of a cocktail. This is a regular old Liguori Manhattan. That is, in this case, one part vermouth, three part Sazerac.
Ooh, nice.
Rye whiskey from the same company that makes Buffalo Trace, and then you know, a couple cherries in there and a little bit of a cherry bitter. So cheers, everybody.
Cheers to that. Sounds lovely.
It's gonna be a good night.
I sure hope so. And we're not going to talk about the whole thing about going to work tomorrow, though. We're going to enjoy the evening. Well, you just heard him chuckle over there, just a little north of Chris and just a little east of myself in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We have Michael Turner here with us. Turner, how are you doing tonight and what are you drinking?
I'm doing great. As you can see, I have my green John Moxley shirt on for St. Patrick's Day. I went to the Crooked Hammock Brewery yesterday to a parade and specifically picked up a six-pack of various beers, including the Savagely Delicious Triple IPA, which I will be delving into here. This is a 10.9 ABV with hints of lemon and Lucky Charms cereal.
Ah.
Get a little pop. Oh, there we go. That went all over the place, but that's fine.
I want that beer so bad.
I do too. And I love that thematically it fits the Irish thing.
I will pick you up some. I got to pick up some for Scott Barber next weekend anyway. So yeah, I will be happy to send you some.
There you go.
That is fantastic.
Excellent. Excellent. And last but not least, heading back into Florida, even further south from Fort Lauderdale, we've got Brandon here with us. Brandon, same two questions to you.
Buddy, I'm doing great. I worked earlier this morning. I worked 7 a.m. till 3, came home. I knew I was working today, so I didn't do anything for St. Patrick's. But to everybody, happy St. Patrick's Day. I hope everybody's had a safe day. I'm doing great. St. Patrick's Day, it actually means a lot to me. A good buddy of mine, we used to always party all the time. and he's no longer with us. So our tradition always, like most people, St. Patrick's is a shot of Jameson and a Guinness. And in boozy history, all the episodes I've listened to, I don't think anybody's ever done a shot. So a shot of Jameson. Here we go.
Cheers.
There we go. And nice cold glass of Guinness. I already popped it. I apologize, guys. But yeah, things are good. I do want to say one thing. Nathan, Christy, me and my wife, we are 11 weeks in, waiting for our baby to come. And we're doing a list of which horror films we feel comfortable with our soon-to-be to watch. So if you have any advice on that, just let me know what movies. Let's have a good time, guys. Cheers.
Antichrist.
I will say, when she was first born, my daughter and I went and, I had the early shift from about 10 to 2 at night, and we would throw on an old, Flying Saucers, all of those oldies that I never would get around to watching. And that was a lot of fun for me personally, but all your Peter Cushings and your those movies.
Right. That's all.
Brent, I will tell you, I would 100% avoid The Witch.
Oh, no. Rosemary's Baby, Witch. No.
The Omen.
Looks like a Cabin in the Woods, maybe. Not The Omen. Yeah. No, not The Omen either.
Definitely not.
If you guys have ever seen Z, it's a movie about a kid that has an imaginary friend, and there's a good twist midway through. That's a messed up children's film as well. Z, very good movie.
Okay, interesting.
Bro, yeah, Brightburn.
Not doing Brightburn either.
This Children of the Corn? No.
I have never seen any of these movies, which again is why I am hosting. it's not that I
all right, let's do it.
It's not that I don't like horror movies on occasion, but I've just never gotten as into it as a lot of folks seem to be. So we're going to dive into this, but real quick, I got to pop open my beer too. I'm actually joining Turner on the triple IPA train tonight.
Let's go.
This is a beer. I bought a 4-pack of these recently, so I've featured it elsewhere, either over here or on Pub Trivia Experience. It's called Unicorn Vomit. It's a triple IPA, as I said. It's brewed with watermelon, 12.8% ABV. Ooh. So it is not messing around. And it's actually out of a brewery called Aslan Beer Company that is from Alexandria, Virginia, which is my old stomping grounds. It's where I grew up. So, and I didn't even realize that when I picked up the 4-pack. So that was kind of exciting. Cheers, everybody. Let's make some bad picks, shall we? Or actually, better yet, make good picks, but you know.
Y'all better start with a good one.
I've been around boozy for way too long to expect too many of those. No, I'm just kidding. We are going to start with a good one. And, It's a 1 versus a 16 seed. So in the play-in game for the 16 seed slot was between Cujo and Halloween 2, and it really wasn't much of a matchup. Halloween 2 won that one 5-2-0, but now is where the rubber really meets the road, because it's got to take on the number 1 seed of Nightmare on Elm Street. Nathan, you're kicking this one off.
I unfortunately think this is going to be another pretty heavy sweep. I just don't know how. I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street's got everything going for it. You know, it's got one of my favorite staples of 80s horror, which is a debut of a megastar in a pretty niche movie at the time in Johnny Depp. You know, then you've got Wes Craven, the master. You've got Robert Englund as his appearance as Freddy Krueger, the man with the creepy claw hands, like, who, you're never safe in your dreams. Like, everyone sleeps, he shows up, kills you, you know? And I think it's just such a classic. It's got one thing that I think it does so well that I love so much about this movie is your heroine is so competent in the movie, especially in the final act, the final scene. Everything she does, she's just kicking ass. And, you know, what makes Freddy so scary is he keeps coming back, even though she's so competent. And everyone else in her life doesn't believe her. She, you know, it's, which went from her perspective, it's like, at this point, like, everyone's letting her down. Her dad's letting her down. Her boyfriend's falling asleep and getting sucked into the bed. And, you know, it's just such a great scare. It's scary even now, but it's also kind of, it's just fun too. Every scene with Freddy, he just steals the scene. You know, I immediately think of that first scene where you see his arms are like 20 feet long walking down. And it's just stuff that you've never seen before. So for me, Nightmare on Elm Street is a, you know, top horror movie of all time. Not necessarily number one, but it's up there in the ranks for me. Whereas Halloween 2, it's got Mike Myers, and I love Mike Myers, but it's no Halloween 1, you know? So I'm going to have to give it to Nightmare on Elm Street, no question.
Yeah, no question there from Nathan. Nightmare on Elm Street picks up its first vote. Christy, you're up.
I'm going to have to agree. Nightmare on Elm Street is the far superior movie in this case. I mean, a guy walking around in a William Shatner mask, slowly chasing a girl, versus a guy who can come at you from any angle. Like, you think the characters are awake, and it turns out they're actually asleep. So it's like you never know what's real and what's a dream. And I mean, just the scare level, like, and like my childhood, like I had a Freddy Krueger mask. I had the claws. Me and my sister, we'd go around Wolverine style and try to slash each other. So it's going to Nightmare on Elm Street.
And Nightmare on Elm Street picks up its second vote. We'll check in with Chris.
One, two, Freddy's coming for you. Oh, when you hear that, like, it's chill. Like, you may not be scared, but it's still kind of creepy. This isn't close, right? One of the things that I love about Robert Englund, I'm sure we'll talk about this more later, but I talked in the bonus episode about how Halloween 2 added to the mythos. Robert Englund added to the mythos every time he was out there. For him, it was about building a scary character. And every single movie, no matter how bad they are, and some of them are terrible, he's entertaining as hell to watch, but he's adding something to the character that's just a little bit more fun. And yeah, he goes, sometimes go a little bit to the slapstick and the comedy, but he freaking nails it here. This is Nightmare.
Nightmare picks up its third vote. To nobody's surprise, we'll be moving into the next round, but we still want to check in with the rest of our panel, starting with Turner.
I will have much, much, much more to say about Nightmare on Elm Street as we advance into the ongoing bracket. It's not just probably my favorite horror movie of all time. It's one of my favorite movies, period. It's quintessentially 80s terror. Like, the knock on Freddy Krueger is that he becomes a cartoon character in later movies, and that's a fair assessment. I mean, we get to Freddy's Dead, and they're literally stealing jokes from Looney Tunes movies, like literally pushing a bed of spikes, and him like acknowledging the camera, breaking the fourth wall, like, "Oh my God, this is such hard work killing teenagers." But in 1984, it is pure terror. Wes Craven's directing, he accomplishes so much with so little. There is a reason we don't even have the Lord of the Rings movies without Nightmare on Elm Street, because New Line Cinema is admittedly the house that Freddy built. They wagered everything on this little teeny movie being a success, and God, was it a success. I love Michael Myers. As Nathan said, if this were Nightmare on Elm Street against the original Halloween, this is a much more interesting discussion, but this is lower tier Carpenter. We have a much better Carpenter movie coming up in, I believe, our next matchup. So we'll talk about Freddy later on.
And we will be talking about Freddy later on. Nightmare on Elm Street picks up its fourth vote. Brandon, do we have a sweep?
Yeah, of course we do. I mean, I am wearing the shirt once again. I think really what hurt Halloween 2, and you could see it sometimes when it is airing on, they will add in some of the deleted scenes. When they have those deleted scenes in, the film doesn't seem so choppy. Like, there's a scene when the one nurse tells Dr. Loomis, hey, they're brother and sister. Then they go to school. Well, that whole school scene where they go there and they look at the whole chalkboard and everything, that's all I cut out in the original. And then I believe there was a scene where she meets in a dream state. She does meet Michael when they were younger. And that was cut out. Those scenes, when they're added in, it adds to the film. I really do like Halloween 2 a lot. I love it very much. I always have. But Nightmare on Elm Street, what Wes Craven created just blew up horror. And it, for me, it's definitely in the top 30 range in horror for me. But for most people, what Nightmare on Elm Street means, it's top 10, top 15. Wes Craven, Robert Englund, Johnny Depp, Heather Langenkamp, we didn't really bring up. We just said, oh, the heroine, she crushed it. And the one film I would say I'd rather have on this, Dream Warriors.
I knew it was coming. Yep.
Three was great. And it started having more of that Freddy comedy, but it still had like probably the best kill in Nightmare on Elm Street history with the TV. Freddy Krueger, he fucking kicks ass. And yeah, has to move on. Has to. And is.
Has to and is. You took the words right out of my mouth. Yes, Nightmare on Elm Street does handily beat Halloween 2, and we'll be moving into the next round. I was just looking ahead, and this last matchup had the distinction of being the only one in which I, your humble host, have actually seen both movies, and we absolutely got this one right. On to our next matchup. Can I say, and now for something completely different, it's another matchup against a John Carpenter movie. John Carter was this whole different kind of horror.
You ain't lying, brother.
Another matchup against a John Carpenter movie, but it's going up against something slightly different, let's say, than Nightmare on Elm Street. The number 8 seed is Gremlins, and it's going to be taking on the number 9 seed of The Thing. And Christy is starting this one off.
All right. Well, I'm going Gremlins here because I remember seeing this movie in the theater as a kid. I absolutely love it. It was one of the first movies I tried to introduce my children to. My older one ran out of the room screaming, and my younger one stuck it out, which is why I know she is my buddy on these things. I remember The Thing, and I remember how scary it was and how you couldn't tell, you know, who was the person who was infected. And especially that scene with the blood where they shock it and it like jumps out. Oh, like that's a jump scare in my childhood, I remember. But I love Gremlins, and it's way better than Gremlins 2. So I'm going Gremlins.
Well, in their defense, they went a slightly different direction with Gremlins 2.
Just a little.
But Gremlins does pick up its first vote. We're going to check in with Chris.
Chris is not doing well because this is the one that's going to keep me up at night because I genuinely love both these movies. Mm-hmm. Gremlins on IMDb is categorized as a comedy. Guys, that's not a comedy. It's a horror movie for kids. So that's why it's in this part of the bracket. I actually was so torn about this that I actually went back and watched both of these right before we started. I was finishing Gremlins. That's why you guys got the link late. So here's some notes that I took. So in Gremlins, Mrs. Deagle gives Nurse Ratched a run for her money when it comes to worst movie villain. Legitimately called a mom and husband lazy bums in front of their kids as they're admitting they don't have any money for presents. Tells the mom to ask Santa for money. Then, by the way, one of the saddest moments in any of these movies is when the little boy looks up at his mom and goes, "Mom, I'm hungry." And she just looks forward and goes, "Yeah, me too." And they walk off screen. Damn it. Okay. Let's keep going here. She then goes into the bank and describes to the guy who's helping her how she is going to torture and murder his dog. Slowly torture and murder his dog. This woman is terrible, but there's some bright parts. The radio DJ, in true Spielberg fashion, loves self-referencing himself. Radio DJ is 100% Indiana Jones or an Indiana Jones ripoff. It's wonderful. Why didn't the bartender leave the bar instead of serving the gremlins? She's sitting there lighting cigarettes and pouring alcohol and beer for the gremlins. Also,
why doesn't beer or alcohol affect the gremlins the same way straight water does? That makes no sense. We should be having drunk gremlin babies running around somewhere. Also, the biggest question I have coming out of this movie is, who does Steven Spielberg know that they were able to get a tentpole Disney property in a Warner Brothers picture? How did that happen? They legitimately showed Snow White in this movie. Okay. And yeah, now I actually do want a Gremlins house at Halloween Horror Nights. What I found myself wondering and thinking is, I had time to write all these notes for Gremlins because I didn't have to be paying attention to the story. In The Thing, if you stop paying attention, you lose track of what's happening. It's an engrossing movie. I will piss the people off by saying this, but of all the movies on this bracket, it's the best visual representation of body horror you get. And yes, I know The Fly is coming later.
Yeah.
The Thing is terrifying. It's pulse pounding. It's gripping. I think it's John Carpenter at or near his peak. And looking back on it, it's not hard to say this is The Thing. It's a better movie.
And The Thing pulls even with Gremlins. As Chris reminds me, how long it's been since I've seen Gremlins, because I remember none of that. Turner, you're up.
There are this like Chris said, this is legitimately tough. This is if this were a Christmas movie bracket, Gremlins would be my number two after Die Hard. If this were a family movie bracket, Gremlins is probably a top four for me. Like, I view it more as like a family movie than like, who didn't want to take home a Mogwai for Christmas? Like, it's just so damn cute. And you have, you know, Zach Galligan doing Zach Galligan things, trying to be the leading man. And, you know, he only succeeded in the Gremlins movies. They're good on him. You have Phoebe Cates at the height of her 80s powers. You know, Fast Times and Gremlins were such a one and two for her. It's so much fun. It's just legitimately fun. But in no way, shape, or form is it a better movie than The Thing. The Thing is John Carpenter's absolute atmospheric masterpiece. If when I looked at the horror bracket and I said, why is The Thing on the same side as Nightmare on Elm Street? I'm going to punch someone. And now they're like, I'm thinking they're going to have to go up against each other literally in the next round. And it's ridiculous. They're my one and two for 80s horrors, and always have been. You don't know who to trust. You don't know what to trust. You don't know to trust yourself. It is, the special effects are incredible for a 1981 film. They're just off the charts. Kurt Russell plays it so low key when you have an opportunity to kind of ham things up a little bit, and he's underplays it so well. God damn, I love Gremlins, but I cannot vote for it over The Thing, and I won't. It's The Thing.
And The Thing picks up its second vote. It's on the ropes. It's got Gremlins on the ropes. And we're going to see if Brandon's going to push it over or push us into a buzzer beater situation. Brandon.
I was going to make this really easy and just be quick and simple, but I'll build it up a little bit. Gremlins, Gizmo is fucking adorable. If he just didn't have that issue, he'd be the coolest pet in the goddamn world. He really would. Gizmo would be awesome. But he has an issue that makes things run amok in their ugliest sin. If I was that bartender, I briefly remember that scene. It's been a long time for me as well. I would have just started partying with the gremlins. I probably would have. I would have survived, because if I'm just partying with them, it would be a hell of a story. Oh, man. I partied and drank with a bunch of gremlins. It's not the greatest movie in the world. So The Thing, it's almost like So we'll talk about this down the road. Thriller, I think. The Shining. Long, drawn-out movie. It feels like it's a 2.5-3 hour movie, but it feels like you're watching a 4.5 hour movie. But it is so fucking good. Over and over, when you look at top 10, top 20 horror film lists, it's a sci-fi film. It's a sci-fi horror, but really is more sci-fi. But the horror is just engrossing. Rob Bottin, I think that's his name. That is the makeup artist of The Thing. Holy shit. Let's continue. Keith David, Kurt Russell, Wilford Brimley. The Thing, I can't believe it's a 9 seed. Rotten Tomatoes, I know. But the movie over and over again, look on Shudder right now. Every time on Shudder, when they talk about their best films, number one, number two, number three, it's always The Thing. The Thing moves on.
The Thing does move on. Picking up its third vote over The Gremlins. I do want to hear from Nathan, though. Do we get this one right?
Oh, I would certainly say we got this one right. I can appreciate, you know, one thing that we don't have enough of are horror movies accessible to children. So I have to give Gremlins credit. As a father of 3 children, it's hard to find movies that I can sit down with my 6-year-old and say, this is a horror movie, but you can watch this, you know? And so I give Gremlins a lot of credit for that. I believe Chris Columbus was on that one. He's got something.
He wrote it.
I'm still waiting for my Home Alone and Gremlins crossover movie. I think that's a missed opportunity there, but you know, it's tough because these are great movies, and in a lot of ways they don't deserve to be facing each other this early. But you know what everyone said about The Thing is so right. I remember the first time I saw that head spider thing. There's not another word for it. It's just a thing, right? Like that's just some kind of mashup of flesh and human. And I was like, how did they make that? You know, like I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And just every scene with a creature in that movie just tops itself over and over again. Until, you know, the end of the movie, and I'm still reading new takes on which one of them was the thing at the end. And I know we're not supposed to know, and that's the point. But, like, I have an opinion. I know that it's wrong, because we're not supposed to have an opinion, but it's just, and plus Kurt Russell, I love Kurt Russell in everything that he's in. He's so great. You know, he's kind of your quintessential action star this time. And Keith David, too, of course, but I could watch The Thing over and over and over again. It would never get old. So that's it. The Thing is my vote.
And The Thing.
Christy, your face was perfect. When he talked about the monster coming out the whole head, you're like, I do not want to remember that ever again.
No.
The Thing does pick up its fourth vote, and we'll be moving on into the next round to face off against Nightmare on Elm Street. As Turner said, good luck making that decision, but we'll get to that in the next episode. Moving on, our next matchup. Will it be a classic 12-5 upset as we see so often in the NCAA basketball? We're going to find out. The number 5 seed is An American Werewolf in London. The number 12 seed is The Fog. And let's see, Chris is going to be starting this one off.
Oh, the 80s, the decade of true atmospheric horror. Again, John Carpenter's on this list. By the way, we mentioned John Carpenter with Halloween 2. He didn't direct Halloween 2. I think he wrote the story for it, but I don't believe he wrote the screenplay, and I know he didn't direct it.
I think that was Mustafa.
Did not know that.
But
or Deborah, I mean, Hill.
We're looking here just... I love one of these movies so damn much. And the other, I really, really, really want to love, but I can't get there because The Thing did it better. The Fog is, it's good. It's good. But Carpenter set the bar way too high. Then you get to American Werewolf in London, which is one of my favorite horror movies ever made. It is so wonderful, so ingenious. The transformations, by the way, still hold up today. True, real life visual effects at the peak of it is amazing. By the way, watching these movies again, I miss real life effects. I'm tired of digital effects. Give me some real stuff, please. But there's just, for me, nothing that's going to top the chaoticness of the last 45 minutes of American Werewolf in London. Not to mention they went to a porno theater, guys. It's hilarious. It's bloody. It is a wonderful movie. I love it. I'm going American Werewolf in London.
And I know Chris well enough that I had already written down his vote before he started talking. I'm well aware of his affinity for that film. We got to do that haunted house at Halloween Horror Nights at one time. That was really cool, too. So American Werewolf in London picks up its first vote. I want to check in with Turner.
So Chris is a little mistaken in when he said that John Carpenter had already set the bar. Actually, The Fog is 1980. The Thing is 1981. So he topped.
I was referring to 78.
I got you. But the Fog just like I don't have a strong opinion in this matchup. The Fog doesn't really do it for me. It's kind of corny. It's a little bit cheesy for me. I thought the ending was fairly good. Like, I like to see Tom Atkins, like, you know, just kind of chewing up a lot of scenery. But like, Adrienne Barbeau was like only cast because she was John Carpenter's wife, and like, she's not a good lead to me. Only one of these movies did they literally have to create a visual effects Oscar for, and that's an American Werewolf in London. So shout out to Rick Baker's work. Chris already said everything good about that movie. So yeah, American Werewolf in London.
And American Werewolf London picks up its second vote. We'll see how if it's there. Did I mention this is 12.8% alcohol by volume?
It's a Cinderella.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see if The Fog can mount a comeback or if an American Werewolf in London is going to put it away. Brandon.
Like, I agree. I knew Chris right away. I knew where he was going. I knew that too. Oh man, I know it pissed off Chris, Leah Thompson, and other things, and I'm not the biggest fan of American Werewolf in London. I'm not, but I mean, I do appreciate and I like The Fog. Jamie Lee Curtis continuing the Scream Queen, better than Prom Night, and her mother is in this as well with her. Janet Leigh's in this as well. Later on in H2O as well, right before she passed away. But what I will let it move on right now, the special effects, the makeup, oh my God. It's incredible. And you're right, it still holds up to this day. So I don't think it's going to go far, but American Werewolf in London.
And it remains to be seen how far an American Werewolf in London will go, but it does move into the next round with its third vote. We still want to hear from everyone, starting with Nathan.
I have a sort of a soft spot for The Fog, just because I love the ghost sailors, the spooky sailors. Like, that's cool. I wish we had more of that, because we don't really get that until the end of the movie. You know, there is a lot atmospheric going on with the movie that I love, but it's sort of one of those John Carpenter movies you don't hear talked about that much. And that's just because so many of his movies are so iconic that it's hard to, like, The Fog would be a fun movie if it came out now by anybody. But when it's John Carpenter, he shoots himself in the foot by making such good movies that his average movies seem worse, you know? But American Werewolf in London, it just, I still think about the opening, that scene where in the tavern, they're talking like, should we tell them? Should we warn them? No, don't warn them. And you know, it's a werewolf movie. It's in the title, but still it's like, what is out there? You know, like, what's going to get them? Like, I'm scared for them. And then they're out there just, you're saying, stay on the road. They told you stay on the road. You're clearly not on the road. And now you're running. And it's like, what's going to happen? These are our two main characters. And then boom, werewolf. And it's just such a great, great opening to a movie. And it, you know, it all builds up to that classic transformation scene that everyone remembers. It's got to be that for me. Carpenter's got better. American Werewolf in London.
American Werewolf in London picking up its fourth vote. Christy, do we have a sweep here?
Well, I'm going to stay off the moors and stay on the road. So it's going to be American Werewolf in London.
Sweep.
Perfect sweep. Great. Great quote. I see for our listeners, since this is an audio medium, you couldn't see Chris pumping his arms in excitement. But American Werewolf in London will be moving into the next round as it sweeps the fog. And let's see what it is going to be facing off against. We have the number 4 seed, Return of the Living Dead, taking on the number 13 seed. If it's the 13 seed, it's got to be Friday the 13th. We're starting with Turner.
Okay. I want to say there's a lot to like about Return of the Living Dead, but like, this is, it's a goofy movie. Like, I know our statement here is to pick the best movie, not necessarily pick in terms of horror or comedy, but like, this thing is like, it's a damn near slapstick comedy. Like, and you know, it's where you get the whole zombie trope of brains from. It's one of those movies I would watch on like USA Saturday Night Terror or whatever it was called. And like, it's a lot of fun, but like, I don't know. It's not particularly good. It's just there. It's fine. Friday the 13th is not a particularly good movie either, if you're judging quality of films, but like, it's the iconic archetype of the 80s slasher movie. Every trope is present. The final girl, the rising star making his 80s cameo in Kevin Bacon, who gets a lovely little arrow through the neck. Spoiler alert. lot of fun kills in this one. I have a personal connection to Friday the 13th because Tom Savini's assistant, Tasso Stavrakis, his nephew, used to work with me at the television station, and we talk about all the time the iconic final scene when they chop off Mrs. Voorhees' head. You see the hands holding the head, and you see hairy ass knuckles. That is Tasso Stavrakis' hand holding the head of Betsy Palmer. It's Friday the 13th, and it's not particularly close.
And Friday the 13th, the 13 seed, picks up its first vote over Return of the Living Dead. Turner, I'm sorry, I got to make fun of you, though. When you said brains, it sounded like, in my head, it sounded like Yoda doing his impression of a zombie. So nice. when you listen to it, when this post, I'm just curious if you'll keep that in mind and see if you Fair hear enough. That too. Anyway, Brandon, you're up.
I'm not really the biggest fan of zombie films. There are a select few that are perfect. Shaun of the Dead, Train to Busan, a select few. Return of the Living Dead, I was never a fan. Friday the 13th, it started a franchise. It's not great. Kevin Bacon, legendary, killing it. And a pretty damn good twist. First time we're actually learning about Crystal Lake, and halfway through, towards the end, find out it's crazy Mrs. Voorhees. Mm-hmm. We heard Jason's name before, and then later on we meet Jason. So definitely Friday the 13th.
And the 13 seed picks up its second vote and has the 4 seed on the ropes. Is Nathan going to put it away?
I think Return of the Living Dead is, well, yeah, it's a bit of a corny movie. It's so much fun. I love every bit of that movie. It's just, you know, it's got your classic gang that all get what's coming to them, and you've got your toxic waste and you know, your zombies, but they're kind of fun zombies. But it's really hard to beat what Friday the 13th did to the
the summer camp subgenre. You know, I actually grew up in a town called Crystal Lake. So I have it's a completely different Crystal Lake, and I don't think the one in the movie is even supposed to be representing a real place, but that was kind of our town, you know, our bit, you know, like it's Crystal Lake, Jason is coming, you know, that's kind of our thing. It's got such a good twist at the end that sets up the franchise so well too. You don't even have Jason in the movie for real until the end, and yet he's so memorable. So I would go with Friday the 13th as the better movie personally.
Friday the 13th, the 13 seed, picks up its third vote and has knocked off Return of the Living Dead. But I want to hear from everybody to find out if we got this one right, starting off with Christy.
I'm going to go with we got this one right. This Friday the 13th, it's not my favorite Friday the 13th, mostly because his mom's going around and not him. And it's kind of like Mike Myers in that respect. It's like somebody's going around doing something and eventually it turns into a slow walking big guy who's unstoppable. But I do love the zombies in Return of the Living Dead because they're not your basic like brainless zombies. Like they can actually do stuff. But I'll still give it to Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th has its fourth vote. Chris.
Yeah, I don't care. It's not the best Friday the 13th movie. It's not a George Romero zombie movie. I don't care. Give it to, you know what? Yeah, we'll have a sweep. We'll have a sweep. Take out the four seed. That's fine. Give it to Friday the 13th. But I doubt I'll ever go back and watch either of these ever again.
Friday the 13th does pull off the sweep, just like the matchup ahead, which will set up our matchup between it and American Werewolf in the Elite Eight. But for right now, we're going to move over to the other side of our bracket. To the 2-15 matchup in our play-in game, the 15 seed was a little bit of a nail-biter, but Fright Night did edge out My Bloody Valentine. For the privilege of going up against The Evil Dead 2, we're going to kick this one off with Brandon.
Okay, so we actually right here, if you really think about it, Fright Night, it's a comedy horror with a little add-in of like drama, a little bit of romance, and then The Evil Dead 2, following up with Evil Dead 1, a cult classic in itself, and it turned over to a little bit of like the Freddy like comedy horror. And of course we get Bruce Campbell and Ash back, and his girlfriend goes crazy and all shit hits the fan. I like Fright Night a lot. I really do. But Evil Dead, it's a classic. And forever will be. Evil Dead.
Evil Dead picking up its first vote. Let's check in with Nathan.
I think Evil Dead, without question. I mean, how you can just tell how much fun they had making this movie. You know, Evil Dead, the original, kind of said, this is what we can do with this concept. And Evil Dead 2 was the sequel that kind of proved, we're going to remake Evil Dead 1 and then make it better all in one movie. And not only that, but you end it with a portal to time travel, only to set up even greater places for this franchise to go. I mean, between the two of these, which one is still getting awesome sequels? It's got to be Evil Dead. And Bruce Campbell is the best in everything. So,
Evil Dead 2 picking up its second vote. Already, we've got another one on the ropes. Let's check in with Christy.
I'm going Evil Dead 2. Pretty much for all the reasons Nathan said. I love how they end it. Sets us up for Army of Darkness, and it's just I didn't particularly like the first Evil Dead, but I do like the second one, and as much as I love vampires and Fright Night, I'm just gonna give it over to Evil Dead.
Evil Dead 2 picks up its third vote and will be moving into the Elite Eight. Not a whole lot of nail biters so far tonight, unlike most of these movies that we've been discussing. Let's check in with Chris.
Beginning to think I got some really different opinions than other people on this show because Fright Night is a great movie. I talked about it on the bonus episode, but relationship horror is intriguing to watch. It's the reason why the movie Funny Games is so damn uncomfortable to watch. But that's not what we're here to talk about. Before we get into the conversations or the wicked emails from people, Evil Dead's on the bracket. It's over on the independent film side because it was a true independent film. Yep. Okay. Between these two, I will 100% watch Evil Dead 2 more often than I will watch Fright Night. I don't know that it makes it a better movie because Evil Dead 2 is not a complete movie. You need Army of Darkness, the companion piece, to finish off the Ash story, and he's your titular character. So in true Stephen fashion, I'm sitting there going, well, it's not a complete movie, so.
That's a terrible but it blends,
he's going to love that later.
It blends slapstick and horror, two genres that should not go together, but it blends it so well that it is at the same time hilarious and endearing. I'm going with heart over logic here. I'm going Evil Dead 2. Why not?
And Evil Dead 2 picks up its fourth vote. Checking with Turner. Do we have a sweep?
Of course we do. Come on now. listen, Fright Night, it's fine. It's good 80s horror that you're not going to feel like you wasted an hour and a half of your life. Like it's a good time. Evil Dead 2 is Sam Raimi's batshit insanity piece. Like, have y'all gone back and really rewatched some of these kills? The fucking geyser of blood as he's trying to drag the person back out of the cellar after the dead eye gets home. Like, it's the greatest one-man performance since Bob Dylan recorded Highway 61 Revisited. It's the greatest one-man performance since Paul Rubens went into an adult theater. This is just Bruce Campbell just doing Bruce Campbell shit, man. And it's just a lot of fun. And I don't know what more you want from that. Fucking sweet, man.
Fucking sweep it is. Oh god.
Yeah, I broke Christy.
Well, the only thing I have left to say about that is groovy. All right. That's yet another sweep on our hands. Let's see. What does that make it? 3 in a row and 4 out of 5 so far in this bracket. Let's see if we can get ourselves a little bit of a closer matchup in this next one. I have a sneaking suspicion it could be. We're going to see how it plays out. It's going to be between the 10 seed of Hellraiser and the 7 seed of Poltergeist. We're going to start off with Nathan.
Oh, man. Don't start with me.
It's just how the cookie crumbles, man.
I love both of these. I extra, extra, extra love Hellraiser. I have a soft spot for all of these movies, even though most of them are terrible. I could rewatch probably 1 through 4, but I know this is only about the first one. Pinhead is just such a... Of all the villains in horror of the 80s, he might be the one I least want to run into. And that scene where everyone knows the scene where his body is reassembled and it's hard to talk about Hellraiser because it's such a unique movie compared to Poltergeist, which is a little more mainstream, a little bit more, it was Spielberg. It's got the classics, all of the hits of a great horror movie. And it's also got such a higher budget, too, that it's really hard to say which one is better. Because you can tell one of them looks better and had the money, but one of them is just so... Clive Barker is just... I would be afraid to get in that guy's mind. I have to give it to Hellraiser just purely based on what they were able to do with what they had and how much some of the scenes in that movie stick with me.
Okay, Hellraiser.
But it is hard. That's a hard one.
Well, that's why they pay us the big bucks, right?
You guys are getting paid?
I didn't get paid. Did you get paid?
Hellraiser picks up its first vote. Let's check in with Christy.
I think of all the brackets, these were the two that I didn't want to be up against each other because I love both of them. I mean, I love the entire Hellraiser franchise. But I'm going to have to give this to Poltergeist. It is one of those movies that I was able to introduce my daughter into horror with this movie. I mean, a sweet little girl disappears into the closet and then just all the effects. And like, this movie gave me nightmares as a child. And I love it for that. Not that Hellraiser didn't, because oh my God. Oh my God. But yeah, I'm going to go Poltergeist.
Poltergeist pulls even with Hellraiser. We have a matchup on our hands tonight with this one. Chris is going to break the tie.
So only one of these movies said, hey, do you remember that guy that made that really messed up 70s slasher movie, Texas Chainsaw Massacre? What happens if we give him a big ass budget and we let him go a little bit crazy and you get Poltergeist out of it? Poltergeist is no joke, probably the movie that got me into horror movies. I love it. You moved the tombstones, but you didn't move the bodies. I love Craig T. Nelson too. Anything Craig T. Nelson does, Coach all the way to Mr. Incredible, I don't care. I love Craig T. Nelson. I love Poltergeist. And then there's Hellraiser, which is the most unique movie. I'm not going to say it's the most unique movie on the bracket, but it's the most unique movie here. It is a true, like, independent film that very easily could have fit in over there, but I couldn't relegate Hellraiser to the independent film bracket. It needs to be here with the horror. This is where it belongs. And I'm going to say this. I'm going to watch Poltergeist a lot more. I recognize that Hellraiser is a very unique voice. It's a wonderful voice. It's a voice that needs to be heard and heard more of, because mainstream horror just keeps going down the same damn path and beating its head against the same damn wall. But Poltergeist is what happens when mainstream horror gives a shit. It's a wonderful story. It's got a real human element that ties it all together. It's got great lead actors. It's got good kid actors. It's scary. I'm going Poltergeist.
And Poltergeist started off a little shaky, but has picked up its second vote and now has Hellraiser on the ropes. We're going to check in with Turner.
So I think, like many of the other panelists, Poltergeist is one of the first movies to truly give me the willies. Like one of those, like, oh, I'm, you know, flipping through HBO, looking for my cartoons. Oh, what's this movie? Oh, that fucking clown. Dear God Almighty. Nightmare fuel. Holy shit. I mean, it's so well done. Like Chris said, Toby Hooper with a budget. That's a very accurate description to put it. Toby Hooper, a master of horror, like many of these directors in this bracket. With that said, Poltergeist represents everything that scared me as a child. Clive Barker represents everything that scares the living bejesus out of me on an everyday basis. Like, just the inherent sadomasochistic nature of horror. Like, you know, riding that fine line of sexual perversion when it applies to the horror genre. I think there's so many interesting conceits in that. And you have the very erudite British Doug Bradley playing this just iconic horror villain. There's much like Freddy Krueger, there's nothing that scares me more than someone that's going to taunt you before he kills the shit out of you. Like Jason and Michael, you can just like run away from. They're silent killers. Like, I'm kind of scared at how big you are, but like
don't fucking razz me before you're going to kill me. That's just like overkill. I fucking love, like, I would rent horror movies, and if they had an advertisement for Hellraiser beforehand, I was fast forwarding that baby because I was fucking terrified. This, we're going to have our first tie break. This is Hellraiser.
We are indeed. Hellraiser pulls even with Poltergeist. I could be wrong, but I could almost see Brandon just excitedly like getting ready for his opportunity to break the tie. But before he gets that opportunity, we do, of course, here at Boozy Racketology, offer, in the event of a tie, for one of the panelists that has already spoken, to throw up what we call a buzzer beater. It's a last quick 30-second pitch to try and sway Brandon one way or another. Does anybody want to throw one up?
I do, but there's one more that I really care more about that you guys could seriously mess up.
So sometimes you got to keep it in the back pocket. I get it. Brandon, it's up to you. Break this tie.
When I saw this matchup, I'm like, all right, this is a good one. And I would love to have the buzzer beater on this one. One of them, I think, is as famous as it is. A great story, family film. Poltergeist really is a family film. The family is going through a lot of things, even not just what's happening at their house. You could tell the family, they're together, but there's a little bit of like awkwardness at times. And then shit hits a fan. Zelda Rubinstein. Oh my God, that little lady. Fucking amazing. I love that little lady. So cool. And then the one scene that everybody thinks of. If my daughter is at the... Alex and I, we do think we're having a daughter. So if our daughter, one time at like 5, 6 years old, is at the TV and she's like, they're here. I might cut our kid off horror films for a little while. And I love horror. I don't watch the film that much. And it's one of those films that it's classic. I get a little bored with Poltergeist. It's all right. Now, Hellraiser. When I saw this bracket, if I saw Cinderella on this bracket at seating, it was Hellraiser. Do I watch the film a lot? No. Why? Because it makes me think of a film like Funny Games, which I'm like, fuck that. I'll watch it once in a while. It is very, very awkward. It is very weird. We talked about body horror, body porn. That movie, it makes you feel so cringe and so horrified. That's what horror is. And Pinhead, if the scientist, the creepy scientist from The Human Centipede, woke up and saw Pinhead and all of a sudden bites, he'd be like, nope, I'm not going to keep on doing what I'm doing. Nope. Pinhead, Doug Bradley did a fantastic job. Jamie Clayton and the new Hellraiser wasn't a bad remake. She's done a great job as the new Pinhead. It's a film that makes me feel really awkward. I don't watch it a lot. But man, if Jason and Michael Myers walked in, they'd be screwed against Pinhead and the Cenobites. Hellraiser is moving on.
Hellraiser is moving on as it ekes out the 3-2 victory and the minor upset over Poltergeist, a movie that I would like to remind everybody, and this is probably what made Turner happen across it in his youth, was originally rated PG.
I'm sorry, guys. I know it's a classic, but yeah, Hellraiser.
Oh no, you're good. I've never seen Hellraiser, so again,
Mike, you're good. You don't have to see it, buddy. It's
now you guys have me intrigued. I kind of feel like I do, but
yeah, pull up with the kids and watch it.
There you go. Sounds good. Yeah,
there was a Hellraiser reference on an episode of Scooby-Doo my daughter was watching the other day. Puzzle box, and then he opens the door and then shuts the door, and then I'm like, oh, man.
That's awful.
Brief side note, I do love the little like side references to adult films that they'll sometimes sneak into kids kid stuff. There's an episode. It's a two-parter of Mickey Mouse Clubhouse that is entirely based on Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh man!
And like, as a kid, obviously you'd never know it, but like, it's got a lot of the same stuff in it. It's just really funny. Anyway. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about this next matchup, which is, Chris alluded to it before in terms of the body horror genre, the number 3 seed of The Fly. And it's going to be taking on the 14 seed of Child's Play. And I believe Christy is starting this one off.
Oh, of all the ones to start off. All right. Yes, I love all the body gore of, you know, Jeff Goldblum's body slowly turning into a fly, like him peeling off his fingernails. Oh, yes. I think I'm thinking of the right movie. And yes, his whole transformation throughout this movie is just gruesome. And then we come to Child's Play, a movie I've again shared with my daughter and one we could watch together. I don't think I would let her watch The Fly, but then she's too far into this rabbit hole now. She will do it without me. As far as which one of them is more intriguing, I'm going to go with The Fly here. And I hate to reference The Fly 2 because it was terrible thinking back at it. But I mean, that kid came out as a larva and it had me hooked. So I'm going The Fly.
And The Fly picks up its first vote. Let's check in with Chris.
Again, like, these are two that just did not find an audience with this guy. Child's Play always just felt a step too far for me from a horror believability standpoint. I am on board with Pinhead. I'm on board with Jason and Freddy and everybody else. But a killer doll, for some reason, there has not been an iteration of that character on TV or in film that I've ever been like, oh yeah, that was really good. I've seen all of them. God, I sat through Bride of Chucky, for God's sake. Didn't like any of them. I'm not going to say I like The Fly, but I respect The Fly. I 100% respect the hours upon hours upon hours that it went into making Jeff Goldblum Jeff Goldblum. And, you know, if you're thinking about Jeff Goldblum becoming an insect, I guess you could say that life finds a way.
I was waiting for it.
We're going to go ahead and go with The Fly here.
The Fly picks up its second vote as I just take a brief moment to say that the only Child's Play movie I have seen is Bride of Chucky. Be afraid, be very afraid. We're moving on to Turner.
So, unlike a lot of other horror franchises that I think start off fantastic and then get cornier and cornier and get worse and kind of degrade the character, I actually think Chucky benefits from being more corny, from being more out there. Like, if you're watching the current USA TV show, it is so fucking out there and it's a lot of fun. The original, when they try and play it straight, just doesn't do it for me. Like, I live by a 3-word mantra: punt that motherfucker. It's so stupid. Like, I'm not terrified of this doll at all. I love the jokester it has come to be. The first film, directed by Tom Holland, no, not Spider-Man Tom Holland, because that would be weird. It's fine. Like, again, you're not going to waste your time with it or anything, but it's not great. The Fly is terrific direction by David Cronenberg and amazing special effects and amazing performance by Jeff Goldblum. So I am curious about the next matchup a lot more than this one. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, Fly is easy for me over Child's Play.
And we will get to that next matchup in just a minute, and The Fly will pick up its third vote and be playing the winner of that next matchup. But before we get there, we're going to have to check in with our final two panelists, starting off with Brandon. Did we get this one right?
I don't like The Fly. I never have. I felt bored. Jeff Goldblum, crystal out of my mouth. He looks like a fly. He looks fucking weird. He, yeah. Gina Davis. We didn't bring up Gina Davis. She does a good job in it. I've always been very bored with the film. I never enjoyed it. And Chucky, Child's Play, never really a fan either. But about a year ago, I went to our horror film festival down here, and there was a documentary called Growing Up with Chucky. It was done by the puppeteer's daughter, who I think she's maybe 3-4 years younger than me. And she legit grew up with Chucky. And the documentary goes film by film by film to the TV series. And what you learn is that everyone that's been a part of that film, all the films, is practically almost the same crew all these years later. Almost the same crew. And if a few of them have left in the first, like maybe second or third, they came back and joined back on again. Brad Dourif, voice of Chucky, his daughter became the heroine later on in, I think, the second to last film. And then she got possessed by Chucky and he went into her. Huh. It's a very family affair with the films. I like that a lot. Yeah, is it a little cheesy, doll running around? Yes, but I would go with Chucky. Child's Play. Jeff Goldblum just creeps me out.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Child's Play is going to pick up one vote against The Fly. Will it be two, Nathan?
I didn't realize that Brad Dourif was the voice of Chucky. That's wild.
Yeah.
Grima Wormtongue is Chucky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that said, the Child's Play movies never really, when I'm watching horror, I want to be scared, and I just can't get scared by a doll when, you know, the practicalities of how many ways I feel like I could stop it in real life, I could kick it, I could put something on top of it, throw it in an oven. I do appreciate the way that they create the doll, you know, a little behind the scenes, they decided, you know what? Serial killer voodoo shit. Now we've got Chucky, and I don't need it to be more complicated than that. And I appreciate it for that. The Fly is just Jeff Goldblum gets to shine. He gets to be himself in every way. It's kind of, I think Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis have great chemistry in that movie. And it's a very sad story too. But there is a romantic element to it. And I just think it's a great kind of unique sci-fi-esque horror movie that every part of it is like, man, I'm really glad I'm not that guy right now. So I really like The Fly. I'm going to give it to The Fly.
And The Fly will pick up its fourth vote and head into the next round, where it will face off against one of these two films in our last matchup of the night. This one's a very interesting one, as has been alluded to. So we're going to see how it plays out. The matchup is between the number 16 of Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which, thanks to Chris, I have actually seen. And it's going up against the 11 seed of Sleepaway Camp. And speaking of Chris, you're starting this one off.
Oh, God, really? Okay.
I did not play it that way.
Okay, so we've talked about the trope about twist endings in 80s movies and how it's really played out. I'm willing to bet not a single person here saw that ending coming. No one did. With that being said, in modern society, we can all recognize how extremely problematic that ending is. But it's still it's a really good ending to a mediocre horror movie that middles and kind of moves its way through a want to be Friday the 13th type of a vibe. And the only thing it has going for is the shock value at the end. Killer Clowns from Outer Space has so much going for it because it's literally Killer Clowns from Outer Space. They come down, they put you in cotton candy, they suck your blood, and they take off in their freaking circus tent spaceship. It is not a good movie. No joke. No one is saying it's a good movie. It is a great movie to watch when you've had a few drinks and you just want to sit down and relax and laugh. I love this movie. And there's not a reason to love it. I love the... They have a love triangle in this movie, guys. There's a love triangle in this movie. You have the scene where the grumpy old cop is interrogating one of the clowns. It has everything you could want from a movie titled Killer Clowns from Outer Space. It gets my vote. It makes me so happy.
And another one that I had already written down Chris's vote before he started speaking. Killer Clowns does pick up its first vote. It's checking with Turner.
So when Chris informed me that we were making a last minute switch to Killer Clowns, this got a lot harder for me because I will say we originally had Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer in this spot. I don't enjoy that movie. It's another one movie performance, but it's Michael Rooker does a good job with it. But we're not here to talk about that. I am on the opposite spectrum. Like Killer Clowns is it's fun. It's a lot of fun, but it is intrinsically stupid. Everything about this movie is stupid. You have popcorn guns. You have cotton candy cocoons. It is batshit insane, but not in like the Evil Dead batshit insane way to where like, I don't know. Like I connected with it as a teenager and then I kind of moved on with my life. Sleepaway Camp, yes, it is all about the intrinsic nature of the shock ending. But behind that, I think you have really good performances by actors who are, in fact, teenagers acting like a bunch of teenagers would. These aren't 20 to 30-year-olds pretending to be teenagers like we got in later 90s movies. Felissa Rose, for her first main role as Angela Baker, absolutely does exactly what she needs to do. And if you've ever been to a con, she's the biggest sweetheart in the world and just loves the fans. Please absolutely go talk to that woman. And for me, like one of the greatest kills in an 80s horror movie, poor Judy with the curling iron straight up the wazoo. And they shoot it so that you don't see it happen. You just see the shadows. It makes it much more portentous on the brain. Like, I love everything about Sleepaway Camp. It turned into an absolutely schlock series with the sequels. We don't talk about those. Sleepaway Camp is highly underrated and will get my vote.
And we do have another matchup on our hand. Sleepaway Camp pulls even with Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And we're going to hand it off to Brandon. Which one of these is going to get your vote?
See, how I brought up earlier Nightmare on Elm Street, The Dream Warriors? This would have been nice right here. Around here, one of these. And then Nightmare on Elm Street, that could have been maybe in the Final Four. Yeah, Chris texted me earlier too. And I'm like, we've known each other maybe for 2 years, and I've known most of the time that Killer Clowns is up there in Chris's top five 80s films of all time.
Not top five 80s, but I like it.
Okay. I have a vivid, like, 5-minute memory of, like, when I was 7 years old of Killer Clowns. That's all I really remember. I just remember a scene of the film. I remember how the clowns look creepy as hell. And that's all I really remember. I remember it being stupid. But it has a major cult following. A major cult following. People love that film. And I respect that. Sleepaway Camp. I've rewatched it a few times. It's okay, but like the first like 5 minutes, she's getting ready to leave her house. And I think it's her terrible stepmother. I'm like, oh God, this film's going to be terrible. Like just that first little bit, I'm like, this film, it got better. Yes, that was one of the greatest film, not just horror, film twist, I would say, of all time. So that's good. And Mike, I agree. I've heard that she's a very nice, nice, nice woman. She loves her fans. Let's go with Let's go with Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Picking up its second vote. Let's check in with Nathan.
I unfortunately had a negative experience with Sleepaway Camp. I had it spoiled for me.
Oh, no.
As I sat down to watch it for the first time.
Oh,
no.
And watching that movie for the first time, knowing the ending, just ruins it. Because the big twist is the takeaway from the movie. It's like, I don't know. It just becomes like a movie that wants to be Friday the 13th, but isn't quite there. And so to me, Killer Clowns is everything that I would have written as a horror movie as a 12-year-old with hanging out with my friends at 1 a.m. And it's just like, I watch it and I'm like, oh my God, he's drinking that guy out of a straw, or popping their nose blows them up. Of course it does. That just makes sense, you know? And I don't know that I could say either of these are well-made movies, but Killer Clowns, I will watch over and over and over again. And I will make people watch it with me and they'll hate it, and I'll love it because they hate it. People who aren't horror fans specifically. It's just so much fun. And so for me, that's the movie.
It is Killer Clowns from Outer Space picking up its third vote. And we'll be moving into the Elite Eight to face off against The Fly. But we're going to let Christy have the final word on this one. Christy, what are your thoughts about this?
We've absolutely got it right here. It is Killer Clowns from Outer Space, because when I first heard about the bracket, that was my first question. I'm like, is Killer Clowns from Outer Space on this? Because otherwise there's no point in it. And then I found out that it was that other movie, and I was just like, okay, fine. But let's not forget the shadow puppetry in this movie, and the balloon animals in this movie. Everything you could possibly want in a circus is in this movie, which made me love circuses just a little bit more. But yes, I love this movie. It's like my favorite one ever.
So, to be clear, this movie was on the bracket. It was over on the independent portion of the bracket, the indie film portion. Yep. And then Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer was here. We just flip-flopped because tonally – that movie feels a lot more in line with the other independent films.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
You made the right choice.
And at the end of the day, I think it is the right choice, because I don't know how Killer Clowns would have fared over there, but over here, it is moving into the next round. It's going to be in our Elite Eight, and we're going to be discussing it a lot more in the next episode. But for right now, we are going to call it an evening. As a brief recap, your Elite Eight is going to look like this. It's going to be Nightmare on Elm Street, number one seed, taking on the number 9 seed of The Thing. The number 5 seed of American Werewolf in London taking on the number 13 seed of Friday the 13th. The number 2 seed Evil Dead 2 taking on the 10 seed of Hellraiser. And the 3 seed of The Fly taking on the 6 seed of Killer Clowns from Outer Space. We hope everybody has enjoyed listening to this episode tonight, and we'll hope you will tune in next week to see how those decisions are made, because as it always goes in Boozy Bracketology, it doesn't get any easier from here. I would like to thank you very much for listening and for supporting the show. You can check out the show notes for all of the details on where you can find us on social media, how you can join our Patreon if you are not already a subscriber, and I will point you in that direction for all of that and not bore you with it here. We're going to sign off for now. For Boozy Bracketology, I have been Mike.
Nathan.
Christy.
I'm Chris.
I'm Turner.
I'm Brandon.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good one.